welcome to the 7th Res Ed podcast, produced by Media Snackers with Global Kids. Featuring Jeremy Kemp, an instructional designer at San Jose State University, talking to us about his varied experiences and his current projects on the go. As ever, we'll have a roundup of events for the Res Ed community, but we'll kick off with some news from the Global Kids guys.
Thanks, DK. Recently, Linden Lab, the creator of Second Life, have released their third edition of their Inside the Lab podcast. This one is of special interest to the Res Ed community because it features a phenomenal conversation with Pathfinder Linden and Claudia Linden about some of the education projects taking place in Second Life, both for adults and for teens. From the Linden Lab blog, these two expert Lindens share some of what they've learned working with educators in-world and at conferences, as well as from participation with some of the groups described in the podcast. There's actually not just a podcast, but also a full transcript available as well.
And we're really excited to share with the Res Ed community that the Global Kids virtual video project premiered last night at Sony's Wonderland Theater in New York City. They've been working all year on a short machinima film entitled Race to Equality, and it was produced by teens from all over New York City. And you can hear snippets from this Res Ed Extra podcast here.
So we just finished having our premiere for our movie, the Machinima, the Virtual Video Project 2008, titled Race to Equality. The premiere just finished, and it was awesome.
I think using a virtual world gives us more say over what we can film, because in the real world, we're just teenagers. So using a virtual world really enables us to convey some of the ideas that we want to convey in a really creative way.
Second Life actually shows us there's more to life than just, you know, what we normally see.
To hear the Res Ed Youth Voice podcast part one in its entirety, please visit the Res Ed podcast on resed.org, or if you subscribe to the feed, the podcast will download automatically.
And in other virtual world news, EA launched finally the Spork Creature Creator, the first actual application associated with the highly anticipated Spore game. This creature creator, which launched Tuesday last week, was created by Will Wright and his team, who's known for the video game SimCity and The Sims, as well as the virtual world Sims Online. Spore begins with a player controlling a single-celled organism and progressing through various evolutionary stages until the player controls an entire spacefaring race, at which time we believe people can then interact with other players, turning this game into a full-fledged virtual world. The creature creator is part of the game, It consists of a modeling tool that lets you actually build your own creatures, which at this point in time, even though the game isn't out, you can still build your own creatures, and people are already incorporating them into educational programs, such as Global Kids I Dig Tanzania project. A new group has begun already on Res Ed, so we can figure out how this new, yet-to-be-released virtual world can become something that we can all be using for education.
Also, a very interesting piece came out last week on the ways that brainwaves to chat and stroll through Second Life, which is the world's first attempt to making something like this happen. On June 7th, Keio University succeeded in the world's first demonstration experiment with the help of a disabled person to use brainwaves to chat and stroll through a virtual world. The research group applied the technology to operate the computer using brain images released last year and succeeded in enabling a disabled person suffering a muscle disorder, he was 41 years old, to stroll through Second Life and to walk towards the avatar of a student logged in Keio University. The demonstration experiment opens a new possibility for motion-impaired people in serious conditions to communicate with others and to engage in business. This experiment is a marriage of leading-edge technologies in brain science and the internet, and the world's first successful example to meet with people and have conversations in the virtual world.
Wow, that's pretty remarkable. That's something we should all definitely be watching. And finally, in the news this period, of great interest to not only folks in Res Ed, but specifically listeners to this podcast, today is DK's birthday.
Woo!
Happy birthday to you.
Happy
oh my God.
To you. Come on, they should hear it all.
Happy birthday to DK. Happy birthday. Everyone, you join us. To you. Happy birthday, DK.
Happy birthday.
Thank you very much, folks. You embarrassing people, you.
On with the show.
Another podcast interview with Jeremy Kemp, an instructional designer at San Jose State University. He's been teaching online since 1999,
I kicked off the interview asking about his background and instructional technology.
Well, you know, I've been doing distance education since 1999, so a traditional web-based. A bunch of people get into a web-based classroom and they read materials, they participate in the threaded messaging board, they take exams. So that, you know, it's distance education. And eventually, about the same time, it was in 97, 98, I saw a game called Myth, The Fallen Lords by Bungie, and they're the people that do Halo. So I'm not much of a game player, but I had a friend that was really into it, and I did their web work. So I did a web-based community, and I actually coded in Perl, the Perl programming language. I coded a blogging tool. So we had members that could come to this dynamic website and post information about their gaming activities. So on the one hand, I was teaching people with old-school tools, web content management system tools. I think it was WebCT at the time. And on the other hand, when I came home, then I was working with communities doing this blogging and gaming. So that was really interesting, and that had a big impact on me. And that's really how I got involved in web publishing, was to support online communities of people doing synchronous gaming. So, and that was really interesting. So then I went to Stanford and got a master's degree in instructional design, and then started working here at San Jose State about 6 years ago. So I'm the assistant director of the Second Life campus here at San Jose State School of Library and Information Science.
Wicked. And I was just going to come in and ask you a question around, because I know you've started some interesting work around connecting Moodle and Second Life and have built up a bit of a community around there. Could you tell us a bit about that and, first of all, why you started there and what it actually does now?
Well, in a sense, I was playing in Second Life on my own time, feeling kind of guilty about that, doing work stuff. So I was really looking for an opportunity to put my play stuff to work. So I wanted to know, because I've been supporting people using learning management systems, could we take this 3D front end, this interface, and plug it into a learning management system? So that's, in a sense, I was combining work and play. So I played around a little bit with the connectivity, the web connectivity of Second Life, and really saw that it was possible to do this. And it was October of, was it 97? No, 96. October of 96, I staged an exhibition that demoed some of the things that could happen with a learning management system that was connected to Second Life. And so a lot of people got very interested, and it caused a lot of buzz. And right about that time, I hooked up with Daniel Livingston at Paisley University in Scotland, who's a computer science prof, and we wrote the original white paper for that project to take a look and ask ourselves, how can we teach, how can we do distance learning in Second Life? And if we're going to do that, how are we going to connect it with people who are already doing distance learning with tools? And so really the natural progression, that natural flow was to move Second Life as a 3D interface with avatars and learning management systems to do the sort of more reflective learning where people could come and write long pieces and do threaded messaging in an asynchronous environment.
Wow. So what is the benefit of, because now it's Sloodle in a sense, which is a great name, but what is the benefit of using Sloodle over some other educational learning platforms then? That you have found.
By the way, that name came from combining SL and Moodle, Sloodle. So the back end is the Moodle, the open source learning management system platform. And it allows people to create custom modules. So there's a benefit in the sense that you don't have to come in and reinvent the wheel. So a lot of people coming into Second Life to teach are extreme early adopters, and they're comfortable, you know, scripting objects and putting up display boards and working with students. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. And we think virtual environments are a much larger and wider thing on the horizon for distance education. And we would like to see an easy flow through from people who are already familiar teaching with learning management systems to use that as sort of a scaffold, a crutch, a structure to move their teaching into these virtual environments. So we wanted a that hopefully would make life easier for them in Second Life and also allow them to do things that they couldn't do in Second Life, like reflective long writing and community-based things, reflective things in the Moodle operating system.
So you've got a lot of participants from around the world since you've launched this. Give us a flavor of kind of numbers and also kind of what people, like you say, this reflective learning practices, what people have got out of this platform.
Well, we have just people sign up on our websites, over 3,000. Quite a few people kind of coming and looking. Then we had a Sloodle moot. So the Moodle community has these Moodle moots. They have them in England and Canada, just basically user community meetings. And so we modeled a mini user community meeting called Sloodle moot. And we had a couple dozen educators and presenters come in and show us some of the stuff they've done. So hardcore adoptions, I think, is still ramping up. I think the tools are honestly a little bit rough right now to install. You have to have your own Moodle server. You have to know how to install servers and scripts in Second Life. So it's still a little bit, I mean, I would always like it to be easier to use, but I think it's a little bit on the difficult side now. I think the tipping point here is going to be when we get to a point where it's easier to teach in Second Life with Sloodle than without, and we're not quite there yet. So we're at version 0.3, so we're not at a full release version.
So you're still working out the bugs and still lots of beta testing then?
Oh, yeah. We've got Peter Bloomfield, who's a coder in Scotland, who's just done some amazing work, a lot around the authentication. So when you go into Second Life and you have an avatar, how does Moodle know that that avatar interacting with it is the same as Joe Smith's student? So a lot of authentication stuff coming in, and also making the modules easier to control from the Moodle side as well. So Peter Bloomfield's done an amazing job, as has Edmund.
Okay, so what are the advantages, or what does Sloodle offer over other platforms that exist, like Blackboard and WebCT, other kind of VLEs, if you like? What do you think is the selling point for Sloodle?
Well, you have virtual learning environments in England. We call them learning management systems here in the U.S. And, there's one other project. Blackboard has a project with John Philwalk at Ball State University. He's doing he works at the Institute for Digital Intermediate Arts and Animation, and he's looking at getting students doing lab work. But I'll tell you, in order to customize a Blackboard system, you have to spend a lot more to get that Enterprise Edition than you would just the regular old low-end edition. Moodle is completely free, open source, and so the money that you spend is really on server maintenance and personnel. And so upgrading to Sloodle can be free, except for the labor. Typical open source problem, the labor involved with installing the servers. I'm also doing a project going to be released in fall with the Angel Learning Management System, and we're looking at doing some proof of concepts around authentication and passing objects around. So I would hope that the Sloodle project would be platform agnostic. So eventually, I mean, I've chatted with the Blackboard people and went to Boston, and the Angel people are coming on board. I'd like to see platform agnostic as well as world agnostic. So I would like to see Blackboard working with Wonderland, Croquet working with Angel. I would like to see these worlds interrelate. It's a lot easier said than done.
And I know you talked about developing stuff there. Tell us a bit about something that's on the horizon with use of utilizing SMS and text messaging interfaces with Sloodle. Tell us a bit about that.
Well, this was a brilliant initiative. Barry Joseph from Global Kids came to us and asked us if we could connect up child soldiers in Africa with his teens. That's pretty wild. And the thing is that child soldiers in Africa don't have broadband computing power like Barry Joseph's teens do. So we were asked to open up a portal between someone with a cell phone and someone with access to Second Life on the web. And so we've created an international SMS portal for use by those two populations. So I think that's pretty interesting, and it's sort of a testament to the flexibility of Moodle itself to be able to work with those SMS gateways.
Wow.
And, you know, the majority of that work was done by Daniel Livingston in Paisley, Scotland. Well, he did the entire project.
Wow. So tell us, you were first kind of, it sounds like you were the first to operate in this space. I know you've done something which was a precursor to ResEd called SimTeach. Give us a kind of overview on that, because I think a lot of our listeners would love to go back and have a little look at what you were doing there, or still are doing there, sorry.
Well, that's generous. Yeah, precursor. I think ResEd's a great project, and you're already seeing some wonderful results from professionals like yourself. But so SimTeach was one of the original portals for this sort of mass customizable virtual world as learning tool. So it was the first wiki, the first place where the community really got together, Second Life educators community, and started developing resources with themselves.
Mm.
So if you go to SimTeach.com and plug into that wiki, you'll see a list. It's the official Second Life wiki for now. You'll see a list of all of the educational organizations that have presence in Second Life. You'll also see a large set of scripts, Second Life Linden scripting language scripts, and some other stuff like that. And there's some great sites that have come in that are sort of matching the utility of that site. But for now, pretty helpful.
So tell us in the wider context then, why are you so focused on immersive environments and kind of what excites you about the possibility of and the kind of opportunities that you see within these virtual worlds for education?
Well, I think you only need to look at the amount of addiction and enthusiasm and motivation that happens with a platform like World of Warcraft, which has a much higher quality of content and a much easier interface. You know, that's a multi-million-dollar development effort. And I think you will see in the massively customizable spaces like Second Life and eventually Wonderland and Croquet, you'll see a place where the quality of content and the level of content as well as the ease of interface are going to kind of come together and make it a very exciting place for learning. I don't think it's quite there yet. I think we're all sort of struggling to make this thing useful. But I think it's obvious to a lot of people what's on the horizon. So I would see, you know, in 5-10 years, you're going to see a very solid, capable learning platform and set of ecosystems. Call it a learning ecosystem where people can see their community and the content in three dimensions and interact with it easily. You know, there's been some prototypes of cameras, so put a camera on top of your computer and wave your arms around and you can fly your avatar. There's a lot of interface work going on, and I think it's we're definitely going to hit a critical mass here.
So you see going forward then Second Life, other virtual platforms being almost integrated into kind of real life actions and attributes.
Yeah, augmented reality, that's right. Yeah, it's interesting. People say, well, Second Life is great, but it's not the platform. But I think it's sort of a short-sighted way to think of it, because you've got maybe hundreds of thousands of hours of creative content in there. Maybe Second Life, the viewer, is not the one we'll be using in 5 years. I can't imagine it is. But we'll still be able to go to the Ivory Tower of Prims or you know, to Morocco, virtual Morocco, and see this content. This content will still be there. So to think that, you know, Second Life is not it, and some other platform is going to be it, I think that's half the story. I think we're not going to be using the viewer, but we are going to be seeing the content. And most importantly, the genius of Corey Andreka to create the scripting tools. And really, I think the scripting tools are the first time that you've seen custom created content interacting with avatars and the web in a very easy to script way. So these tools, they were possible with Active Worlds and Dare.com to some degree, but not as easily. And so this is the genius.
So I'm going to ask you a final question here, which is a bit about how you would convince maybe an educator who's looking in the future to utilize or even just to understand, you know, these social kind of immersive platforms that are out there. What would you say is the one kind of reason why they should look deeply at utilizing these things?
Well, you know, it was interesting. I did a Sloan C conference workshop in Arizona a couple months back, and we had a scavenger hunt. I created a scavenger hunt, and I thought that everybody could get together, and we had some big screens. We had four or five projectors around it, and I sent these teams off on these scavenger hunts, and it didn't quite work. It didn't quite meet my expectations of everybody having a good time watching this happen. And this is the key benefit of Second Life. I realized it right then. It was sort of an epiphany. The person with the mouse was having the time of their life. The teammates sitting to their right and left were frustrated. And to me, that's the essence of why Second Life and this sort of environment is so important, because, call it a jargon, locus of control. If you have control of the space and your mouse and building things, going wherever you want, it's extremely motivating. And I think having that level of control and that locus of control for yourself in that environment is key to the learning process. So the person to the right, the person to the left did not have that benefit. They didn't see the point, right? The person who was engaged with the computer, moving their avatar around, they get it. And so everybody who looks over someone else's shoulder and says, Second Life, what's the point of that? Then you get a good idea of they don't have control of their environment. They don't have control of the avatar and the vehicle. They don't get it. They're not engaged. And that benefit, that feature of Second Life is key to the learning process.
Jeremy, thank you very much for giving up your time to speak to Res Ed. Really appreciate it.
Well, I really appreciate it. And thanks especially to Barry Joseph and the people at Global Kids.
To wrap up the seventh podcast, we're going to go over to Barry and Amira in Global Kids to talk about the Res Ed community events.
Planning is now underway for the second annual Teen Second Life College Fair, which will be taking place October 12th of 2008. This college fair will be held entirely in Teen Second Life, and it'll allow teens and representatives from colleges and universities from all over the world to interact with one another. The planning committee is now looking for college representatives and speakers to participate. So if you are interested yourself in getting involved in the Second Life College Fair, go to resed.org for contact information.
And as we mentioned earlier, this September, the Virtual Worlds LA conference will be held, which is more of a commercial environment. There was an education track originally proposed, and Global Kids will be speaking on best practices in education in such spaces. It seems that the education track has been combined with the commercial kids-oriented track. So while we'll be talking about education, others will be talking about, and I'm quoting from the website, purse strings and piggy banks, generating revenues from younger users. Should be interesting. The description from this one includes, this session will focus on the changing nature of targeting younger users and how to ensure positive revenues from this audience. How can developers create safe, secure financial environments for kids? I think I have a different definition of safe environments for kids, keeping youth safe from marketers, but maybe we'll be addressing that in September. In other news, in Madison, Wisconsin, on June 10th and 11th, the annual Games, Learning, and Society Conference will be held. Always a fantastic conference for those thinking about both virtuals and games for education. There's a very, very strong virtual world component, and some Res Ed picks for those 2 days, much of it which will be streamed live, include some of the following. Learning by building in the virtual world. How does someone become a Wyvillian? Hidden issues of race, gender, and trading face parts. Connie Yowell, Ben Stokes, and others from the philanthropy world will talk about games and funding. There's a fantastic panel of an assortment of folks about World of Warcraft. There's a great group that's going to be talking about both The Sims 2 and Teen Second Life from the Tech Savvy Girls folks. And finally, Games as Gateway Drugs. It should be a really interesting panel. It's a mother and a son talking about their experiences, both from their two different perspectives, thinking about what they've learned being in these environments. So definitely check them out. Sonic Foundry will be streaming it live. And you can check the notes to see the links.
And an entire list of Res Ed picks for panels at GLS is up on the Res Ed website. And if anybody in the Res Ed community has news or events that they'd like featured on upcoming podcasts and the website, please email resedinfo@globalkids.org.
All the links referenced in this podcast, as well as the full transcripts, will be available on the show notes at resed.org.